Electra, guys, likes to whisper in your ear before she kills you. I just died. The whole concept of that is just so funny to me.
It makes sense, though. You got to play off of the sex appeal. That's what they were going for back then. And that makes sense why they would do it. Is it a little bit weird in hindsight? Yeah, but, you know, I get it.
But she only done it in the beginning, though, right? Did she do it again in any other points in the movie? I don't remember.
It's something that gets forgotten pretty quickly. I will say that.
Just like a lot of things in this movie.
Yeah.
Only 3 years before the MCU began, and the same year that Batman Begins dropped in theaters, we got this gem of a movie, guys. The first 30 minutes of the film were actually not that bad to me personally. I was thinking, like, in my head, like, oh, wow. Like, I was kind of slightly impressed. Like, is this movie going to end up being better than I remember? But as soon as Bob Sapp walked in... That's when things, and well, really, first the ninja that busted into the house and broke his own neck, and then Jeez. Bob Sapp and the crew came in. It was all downhill from there.
Yeah, I personally thought it had too many flashbacks.
Yeah. Yes.
Because look, and when I say I just rewatched it, like I just finished it 20 minutes ago, so it's still fresh. It's still fresh in my head.
Yeah, and the flashbacks also didn't really make much sense, I guess.
They tried to do flashbacks to tell the story. That was the problem with superhero stories back then. They wanted to use flashbacks as a way to get the origin out while still being able to tell the current present story. And everybody was pretty much doing it. And nobody was thinking the way Christopher Nolan was thinking in terms of, like, you know what? What if we just have a movie that's completely tailored towards the beginning and that's it? And so, like, everybody would try to squeeze as much as possible. We saw Fantastic Four do it. Like, we saw a lot of that happen. We've seen present MCU do that. Shang-Chi was a huge movie that did the exact same thing. At least theirs made sense, though.
Yeah, Man of Steel did a lot of that. I think that that approach can really work. This is an unpopular opinion, but I'm a huge fan of Man of Steel. And I liked how they utilized the flashbacks, but in the right way to kind of give you a little brief origin for this version of Superman. You also kind of fall into the trap of, especially with these really well-established characters like a Superman, like a Batman, these characters that we've seen their origins hundreds of times, it feels like. You know, I think that if it's done right, you can really accomplish something there. But in this film, obviously, it wasn't done very right, along with a lot of other things.
I agree, though. Like, it was just, it felt unorganized a little bit. Like, I don't know. It was weird. Like, I agree with what y'all are saying, where it does work, it can work, but for this one, for some reason, it just didn't. Like, I was annoyed actually by it. But I also agree with the first 30 minutes of it was so cool, like her entrance and everything. I loved that. I was not a fan of the flashbacks,
right? And they didn't really accomplish that much either. We've talked about Val Kilmer's lips on this show. I think that Jennifer Garner's lips are fair game as well. What guys, honestly. I had forgotten about Jennifer Garner's lips, but she was giving Angelina Jolie a little bit of a run for her money with those lips.
Well, one thing I told my wife when I was watching it, probably in the first 30, 45 minutes, I looked over at her. I said, she's frowned up a lot. And the camera was on her, like you said, on her lips a lot. I did notice that.
I mean, she had it. It makes sense. Yeah. I mean, sometimes I think, and this probably is a thing that happens more so for women than it does for men, but it definitely happens for everybody, men too. Somebody will come out with a certain look, and that look gets paraded around by the media, and then it becomes the, you know what? I think we should try that. And movies do the exact same things. They'll like have a certain thing, and it's like, prime example, Margot Robbie. There's a lot of movies out there that you might think Margot Robbie's in, and she's not in them at all, but it's like somebody who kind of looks like her. Kim Kardashian and things like that. If you're a football fan, you saw the Travis Kelce, he got a haircut that's been around for decades, but all of a sudden now he gets it, and everybody's like, I want that too. That happens, and so it felt like that's what they were doing there, and makes sense. Still looked fantastic, though.
Oh, yeah. The reason that we selected this movie, I think it's obvious. By the way, has everyone here seen Deadpool and the Wolverine?
Yes.
Reggie? Okay.
I have now.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. Didn't want to spoil it for anybody, but obviously Elektra's in the film. Going back and looking at some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that's come out now, Ryan Reynolds kind of giving us a little bit of an insight. It's very interesting. Some of the people turn those roles down, like a Vinnie Jones as Juggernaut. You know, he's like, I'm not wearing that suit again.
Yeah.
And also, it was interesting that Ray Parker didn't come back to make an appearance. You would think like an actor like that. You know, I'm not trying to take anything away from Ray Parker, but, you know, he could have benefited a lot, you would think, from making a reappearance as Toad. Some people hate the multiverse concept, and we're not going to harp on this too much, but like something about the kid in me just really enjoys seeing these moments of Elektra, Blade, Channing Tatum, Gambit popping up on screen. It's just fun to me. I love it. I'm a sucker for it.
I don't think Ray Park or Vinnie Jones wanted to do it because I think Vinnie Jones is like 60. He's probably like, I'm not doing that. And Ray Park, I think, is like 50 or 55. So he's also like, yeah. Then again, Wesley Snipes is like around 60. So, hey, you never know.
The villains in this film were the Hand. And I personally really hate comic book movie ninjas. I really hated them in The Defenders. And I think that that's probably one of the weak points of that show. I'm just not a fan. What do you guys think?
It's like cannon fodder, you know? Nondescript villain that we can, you know, send 30 of them out there to get beat up. No personality to them, you know?
Right.
That's exactly what it is.
The means before the boss battle.
Yeah, it kind of feels like Age of Ultron, all the robots busting in there. Nameless faces that can just easily, you know, be extinguished without a second thought. Mm-hmm.
And it made sense for Daredevil to have it. Like Daredevil and Elektra in the show, right, in the Netflix show, were fighting against the Hand. And it was like an easy way for you to focus on them and not necessarily focus on who they were fighting. And then when they wanted to bring out somebody for them, that was like a major thing. Then they didn't have the mask, right? Or they didn't have anything. And now it's like them against whoever this person is in the Hand. It makes sense. It's cannon fodder. Makes perfect sense that that would be the case.
I agree with like, just, I mean, they get destroyed in an instant. So it's like, it's kind of useless to have all these people like flying in and everything. I will say that one thing I did really like the fight choreography that they had. For some reason, those earlier Marvel movies had really good fight choreography. So I really enjoyed all of that.
Elektra, guys, likes to whisper in your ear before she kills you. I just died. The whole concept of that is just so funny to me.
It makes sense, though. You got to play off of the sex appeal. That's what they were going for back then. And that makes sense why they would do it. Is it a little bit weird in hindsight? Yeah, but, you know, I get it.
But she only done it in the beginning, though, right? Did she do it again in any other points in the movie? I don't remember.
It's something that gets forgotten pretty quickly. I will say that.
Just like a lot of things in this movie.
Yeah.
Cary Tagawa, my favorite villain of all time from the 90s, is in this movie. Yes. Even if it is a brief role, and even if he's got these weird looking beads that he's always like holding for some reason, but he still, I thought, turned in a pretty good performance. I might be a little bit biased because Mortal Kombat really holds a special place in my
heart. Right, exactly.
He will always be saying something.
Basically. If you ever go back and you look at anything from the 2000, really 2000 to about maybe 2009, right after Iron Man came out, all those Marvel movies that were in conjunction with Universal and 20th Century Fox and all those, they're not looked at the same because we now have had a Marvel Cinematic Universe that's had crazy good movies. You look at them back and you could see the way they put in a lot of heart and soul into a lot of those movies, whether they were good or bad, which you saw at the end of Deadpool Wolverine in the credits where you're like, oh, I remember, like, there were certain things. Because let's be honest, before Iron Man came out, we used to get excited for those movies all the same.
I was really, really excited to see the 2003 Incredible Hulk, or The Hulk.
Ang Lee's.
Yeah, but we also didn't know. It was like a box of chocolates. We really didn't know what we were going to get.
But that's the thing. Ignorance is bliss sometimes.
Yeah, and most of the time, it was one of those nutty ones that you really didn't like.
That's right.
Or maybe it had some weird tasting cream in it. You just didn't know what you were going to get. You remember that scene where Elektra's scrubbing the floor, like, super anally? Mm-hmm. I know, because my Asian wife likes to have a really, really clean house, okay? She's very strict about a lot of things. And we have to take off our shoes before we come into the house, okay? So
you should have been doing that anyway.
I know, but I'm just saying that being married to her has shown me a few things about certain things. And that one scene where Elektra's being super anal about scrubbing the floor, but yet her agent, aka James Ellsworth, comes into the house with his shoes on, and she doesn't even say anything to the dude. But when he puts the bag down, she has a problem with that. Like, pick that bag up. But yet the whole time he's walking with the shoes. I just thought that was funny.
It is a little bit weird, but yeah, you're right.
By the way, did you guys catch that? I thought that her agent looked a lot like James Ellsworth with not much of a chin.
It's all cut off. Yeah.
It is a little like back. Yeah. James Ellsworth is not a name I thought I would have heard again.
I don't know. I'm sorry, Katie, and I'm sorry to the viewers that don't watch wrestling, but James Ellsworth, we'll be putting clips in the video of what he looks like, and he is a chinless, strange-looking individual.
Had a good run.
He actually did, and he was probably one of my favorite things about wrestling in that era. The sensei was Terrence Stamp. I didn't even know that until after the movie was over. I was watching and doing some research. That was Terrence Stamp.
Kneel before Zod. 65-year-old or 66-year-old Terrence Stamp at the time, too. You know what that also was? That was also a time, because there was also other movies where, legendary actors who we look at as legendary now, they were in previous superhero movies. So it wasn't uncommon for somebody, for a director to go and be like, oh, that was in this person who was in like Batman 1989 or like Superman or one of the old 70s, like, or Lou Ferrigno's Incredible Hulk. Like, they would get people from those as a way to try and be like, hey, remember this person in this brand new thing? It works, and it works here. There's good parts about that, and he's one of the good parts playing Stick at the very least.
I would agree with that, even though I think that his Zod portrayal is a little bit overrated.
Well, now, because we got Michael Shannon, and like I said, that's the thing that happens. Things progress, and now we start looking at everything else a little bit differently, the same way we're going to look at David Corenswet's Superman differently once he comes out, and we're like, is it Henry Cavill, though? That's the way we go.
I think that he's really going to knock it out of the park. I had a short go somewhat viral recently where I was kind of talking crap about the way the suit looked, you know, behind the scenes for David Corenswet. He's not a Henry Cavill. Nobody's going to be Henry Cavill, okay? Henry Cavill is literally a Greek god, but I think that he's going to kill it. And he's also bigger than Christopher was when he was playing Superman in the 70s and 80s. I've seen behind the scenes photos of him like working out in the gym. He's jacked. It's going to be good.
Okay. Then look at Daredevil Netflix versions Elektra versus Elodie Young versus Jennifer Gardner. Now, nothing against Elodie Young. Beautiful woman. Looks great. Like, kind of you go, okay, yeah, Elektra. But Jennifer Gardner, there's just like a different kind of presence. And so when she appears in Deadpool Wolverine, you kind of go,
right.
Versus Elodie Young, who's kind of like, and mind you, I know Elodie Young's in G.I. Joe and everything like that, but she's kind of like, she doesn't seem to have the same kind of presence. And so when she's beating up all these ninjas, I don't believe it as much as I do with Jennifer Gardner, because I don't know. She put in that extra work, just feels like.
And we mentioned Angelina earlier. She kind of has that same big D energy that that Jennifer Garner does too. You know, there's certain people that can pull off action roles. I see what you're saying, John. And you know, it's not just with females, it's with men too. Like certain male actors, especially these days, that seems like they're a lot more prevalent. They just can't pull off that bad A figure that some can. You know, not everybody's an Arnold Schwarzenegger or a Wesley Snipes, right?
But that doesn't mean you need to be Kevin Hart trying to play an action, you know what I'm saying? So I get this.
At least he's swole, you know, that's half the battle.
Yeah. Well.
So Elektra can vanish like Batman, apparently. That's one of her unknown powers that we didn't know about until this film came out. She can also see into the future, kind of like Madam Web.
Yeah, they added a little too much.
Yeah, see, the list you keep making is growing and growing of things that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
This is the problem. The more you start to think about it, the worse it gets.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like when they gave Superman telepathy powers in Superman 4. And the power to take his S off of his suit and throw it and encapsulate a villain in that way.
Man, I almost forgot about it.
To be fair, purists will say that that's her instinct, because Elektra technically is supposed to have a ninja or assassin's instinct, and they do kind of give it to Daredevil too. I get it, but it does look a little bit weird.
The soundtrack to this movie, you guys are going to laugh at me, okay? I don't care. When I was growing up, I'm from South Mississippi, and I'm white, okay? So I loved Nickelback. I loved Creed, Evanescence, all that stuff. Wake me up inside. I can't wake up. All that stuff. I was such a sucker for, okay? This soundtrack, I don't know if you guys have ever listened to it, but it's actually not bad. I grew up in that era, 2005, 2006. I had this on a CD. And it was actually, you know, I heard a little bit of the soundtrack here and there in the film, not as much as I was hoping. I personally enjoyed the soundtrack.
What was like the best song on there, you think?
I'm a big fan of Creed, and Creed broke up in 2004, and the band members formed a new band called Alter Bridge. And there was one song that was exclusive to that soundtrack where he sang, he always sings really high, but there was one song on that soundtrack that he sang ridiculously high. I mean, it was just mind-boggling. So that's probably my favorite song, the Alter Bridge song. I can't think of the name of it.
Yeah, was it in the movie or no?
No, so the only song that was in the film was a Submersed song. They're a lesser-known rock band.
Oh,
I love Submersed. I think they only had one album, maybe two.
It's just a regular – it's the soundtrack everybody used back then. All the movies had the same soundtrack back
they
then.
They did.
Daredevil 2.
Everything. Mission Impossible, Underworld. All they all had the same.
As much as I love that type of music, it doesn't help a film age well. The best type of soundtrack that you can have is a Man of Steel – or even a Superman 78, a soundtrack that has a score.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's the best way to make it timeless.
So earlier when I was watching the movie in the living room, I can't remember the exact scene. I think she had grabbed the case, I think, with her weapons in it, the big, long silver case. And mm-hmm. you know, they had this music started thumping. My middle son looked up. He says, "Daddy, why is there battle music?" And she's not fighting. I said, "You know what? That's a great
good point."
And he was right. But they got this pumping soundtrack like you would if you were on a video game and the enemies are jumping out and she's only walking around carrying the case.
The hype-up music. That's what it was. That was the hype-up music.
Yeah.
We saw a lot of that in Tomb Raider with Angelina. Oh, right? Like she wouldn't be doing anything. She'd just be walking, but the walk was the hype-up. Yeah. You're like, all right, I get it. I get it.
As a young boy, it definitely got me very hyped.
They don't do that kind of thing that much these days.
No, they don't. Tattoo man tells him that they're three blocks away, but you can easily like use some other type of technology, like I don't know, like a UAV or a radar or something. Yeah. I don't know. Just tattoo man, by the way, had a lot of snakes tattooed on his back. I mean, that was at least 100 plus snakes coming at him at the end there. And also, why can't like when those tattoos come off of him, they're like a bullet sailing through the air. Why can't they just stay in that form and just go right through somebody instead? When the bullet gets to the person, they have to fall and become a snake and slowly creep up. You know, I just thought that was kind of convenient.
Ironically, that was not a race swap. That was a gender swap because I'm pretty sure a tattoo was a woman.
Oh, really?
I think so, if I'm correct. And they just had it be a guy. Yeah. So, like, I think that might have been the case. I think part of the reason they did that is because they could do, like, the whole he could take his shirt off. Obviously, with a woman, it would have been a little bit harder. But I'm almost certain tattoo was a woman in, the comics.
Okay, we'll have to check you in post. Yeah. We'll call you out if you're wrong.
Hey, feel free to call me out in the comments. But yeah, I think so.
You know way more about the comics than I do, by the way. So you can really tell that it's lower tier on the budget scale. Some of the special effects are really bad. Like I said, initially, the first part of the movie, I think that they were doing a better job of disguising that and hiding that. But later in the film, a lot of that stuff really became more apparent.
It should have been a fighting movie and just left it at that. They tried to do a little bit extra. And sometimes when you try to do a little bit extra, it's like it's ninjas. You don't have to make it too complicated.
Like I said, with Bob Sapp, when he came in, you know, that's I thought that was hilarious, by the way, as an MMA fan to see Bob Sapp. I mean, Bob Sapp was kind of prevalent in that era. He was in the Longest Yard.
Yeah. He was just a guy that was in a bunch of stuff. Like if he wasn't fighting, he was in commercials. If he wasn't in commercials, he was in movies because he was in a couple of other things like the Blood and Bone and like those kind of fight movies. Conan, I think he was in things like that, where he's just one of those people that's in a bunch of random things. You just see him in everything.
I do think that the kiss of death was just an excuse to have a little girl on girl action, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was one of those things where the director was like, you know what? We need to have this character that can do the kiss of death. And they might have been male in the comics too, but we got to gender swap that.
Different time.
Very different time. Right. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you guys a fun question here. Who do you think's the better stick? The stick from here, the film, Terrence Stamp, or the stick from the Netflix Daredevil series?
Oh, Netflix, for me at least.
Yeah, same for me, Netflix.
Well, I haven't seen the Daredevil series yet, so I know, I'm sorry. I'm working on it because now I know they're doing the, you know, I know.
Everything's canon.
But I really enjoyed Stick in this movie. Like, was it Terrence, what's his name? Terrence Howard?
Terrence Stamp.
next time, baby.
Yeah, sorry. Anyways, but I really enjoyed, I think, like, he's always just played that, like, wise
mentor figure.
Like, yeah, like, kind of dude. So I liked him.
I think I would agree with you, honestly. Like, I know it's probably controversial, but I think I may like Terrence Stamp better than what we got from Scott the Netflix. Glenn. I wasn't one of those people that were like, that wasn't like a super big holding Terrence Stamp as Zod on a, putting him on a pedestal. I thought that his performance was fine for the time, but hasn't aged very well. But him as Stick, I thought was good.
I think Scott Glenn's the, I think he's the more accomplished actor at that, because he's been in things since like the 1970s. That's Apocalypse Now, Scott Glenn. Like, that's like, he's been in a lot of things. As of late, the things haven't been great, right? Like, most people would probably remember him from, he's been in the Bourne movies. He's been in Sucker Punch, Zack Snyder's Sucker Punch, which is not a good film, but he's one of the best things in it. He's in Training Day. So it's like, he's been in a lot of things. And I think he just works as that kind of straight-laced, bare bones, like, not going to take any BS type of character.
By the way, I didn't know this until just earlier, but Jennifer Garner actually didn't want to make this movie. She was contractually obligated because of her contract from Daredevil that she had to make this movie. So I thought that was a fun fact.
Wow.
Go figure.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know that.
And there was also a deleted scene that I totally didn't know about until recently of Ben Affleck in this movie. I think that he met up with him when they were at the camp, like getting prepared to have the final battle. Also, another tidbit of interestingness, I thought. We'll end it with this, conclude it. The movie was the lowest grossing Marvel movie since Howard the Duck, and it had a grand total of $57 million at the box office. I actually made a countdown video about 3-4 months ago of the lowest grossing superhero films, and somehow this film slipped away from my radar. It wasn't even included on the list. It would have been, because $57 million is not that much, but I think that it's well-deserved.
Well, that's because we're so used to saying that about MCU now. Like, the Marvels is the lowest MCU, if I'm correct.
Black Girl Magic!
Yeah, at 200 like, or so mil.
Yeah, and but we're used to saying that, and then obviously Madam Web didn't make any money. So we're used to kind of thinking about that. But yeah, if you go into the entirety of it all, yeah, it is pretty bad.
So guys, if you had to rate this film on a scale from 1 to 10... or 0 to 10, 0 being terrible, unwatchable, I never want to talk of this movie again, and 10 being perfect, where would you put it? We'll start with you, Mr. Reggie.
5. Because, I mean, it's worth watching once. But
very rough. Okay, I think that's pretty fair. Katie, what do you think?
I was going to say 5 as well. It's okay. Like, I can watch it. I can get through it. But it's also like, there were moments where I was like, yikes, I absolutely despise this, you know? So it's... Yeah, 5 out of 10.
People are being generous. John, are you also going to be generous?
No, it's a 2 out of 10 for me. it's not going to be generous at all. I like Jennifer Garner and everything like it. I know that was her peak. She was doing Alias at the time too. But no, it's bad. I can see why she wouldn't have wanted to make it, and I can see why she doesn't talk about it. And I'm pretty sure she's very happy that Ryan Reynolds put her in Deadpool and Wolverine to kind of redeem it, because now we look at her completely differently. But yeah.
Yeah.
Her movie stunk.
Until you go back and watch the movie, and then you remember why we looked at her a certain way.
Right.
For those that are uninitiated, I keep a list in my phone of every comic book movie ever ranked. This is kind of an urban legend now, but every single comic book movie that I've ranked, I mean, there's obviously some that are not on my list yet, but I'm trying to complete that list. And this film, Elektra, when I look at my list, I can't in good faith put it above Superman 3. And Superman 3, I have it a 1.5. I mean, it's a little bit of a toss-up, but the Christopher Reeve being the evil Superman, in my opinion, and there are some small redeemable qualities, like when he was evil Superman and he was in the bar, and someone in the crowd says, "Look, Superman's drunk." That's the first 1.5, so I have to put it in that one territory, and that's just – how the cookie crumbles, guys.
Way it goes.
It's one thing to just, you know, rate movies like off the seat of your pants and say, oh, I give it a 7 or I give it a 6. But when you really start comparing everything and have a list of 150 movies in your phone, you have to really start making difficult decisions. So
That's fair.
Anyway, guys, thank you so much for joining me on this episode of Comic Book Cinema. Katie, where can people find you on social media?
Yes. So I'm on TikTok as Little Katie TV, and I'm also on Instagram as Little Katie TV. So all my socials, I have Instagram. I also have a Twitter, but I don't use it much. But Instagram and TikTok, Little Katie TV.
Very cool. What about you, Mr. Automates?
John Automates. YouTube only, but I am on Instagram and Twitter. I just won't answer you because I'm barely on those things. But YouTube, John Automates, that's where you can find me. That's where I'll answer.
Very cool channel, by the way. Both you guys have really cool content, so definitely check those out. Reggie, do you have anything you want to plug?
I'm out there on social media a little bit. I don't have content, but I'm there if you want to talk. So, but Facebook, Instagram, Twitter is Crimson, K-R-I-M-S-Y-N-N.
Guys, thanks so much for joining me, and until next time, have a good one.